You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
I hit a milestone this year. Later this year, I am going to be turning 40. Which means that I'm actually in danger of becoming a grumpy old man. And the signs are already there. I've taken up riding, cycling. No lycra yet, it's okay. It may not be too far away. And I've also started to catch myself thinking and even saying things like, kids these days. When I was younger, we used to. And kid, yeah, it's horrible. I don't know where it's come from. It's just started to creep in. How much longer until I start hitching my pants up to here and comb the hair over and start wearing sensible shoes? But at risk of becoming that grumpy old man, when I was younger, I think we used to think more deeply about life. Even our comedies would tackle the big questions of life. Things like Monty Python's Meaning of Life is a whole movie about what is the meaning of life. Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy deals with the question, the ultimate question, and the ultimate answer to the meaning of life, which is, of course, 42. And the problem is you don't know what the question is. Now, they were doing it for a laugh, but they were still tackling these big questions. What is the meaning of life? But these days, we seem content to just sort of entertain our lives away. We prefer to watch Australian Ninja Warrior, and it is kind of cool. But we prefer to watch that rather than ask these deeper questions. Well, today we're going to dive head in to a man who has tackled and grappled deeply with the question, what is the whole meaning of life? Because I think as a society, we're in danger of losing what Plato called the examined life. And in fact, he said the unexamined life, this is Plato, is not worth living. And I wonder if in living this unexamined life, we've actually lost a sense of a worthfulness to our lives. And so we see that we're actually living lives that are worthless. We're seeing the suicide rate increase. We're seeing depression at a much grander scale. Well, City Bible Forum exists to ask these deeper questions, so we're going to plough right into the ancient philosophy presented by this man known as the Teacher. And we don't actually know much about this guy. We know that he was one of the kings of Israel, possibly even Solomon. But in a way, it's almost fitting that we don't know all the details of this guy's life, because the words he has to share are timeless. The words he has to share don't apply just to his life, but they apply much more broadly. And as you read through them, I haven't read before, I hope that you found that they echoed into your life too. And he starts off with that strange phrase, utter futility. Utter futility. Everything is futile. It's a strange way to start. And they're strange words when you compare it to the rest of the words of the Bible. And what I want you to discover today as we look at these words is what I think is his point. And that is that if you want a meaningful life, you have to deal with God. If you want a meaningful life, you have to deal with God. Now, these words, utter futility, it's a strange phrase. And what it's actually talking about, the word futility, is a word related to our word for fog or for mist. And who woke up this morning and experienced that lovely mist? It's one of the great things about living in Brisbane, I feel. Waking up every now and then, you're sort of walking in this sort of wonderland of cloud and mist. And you sort of walk in and you think, you see just down the distance, it's just white. And you think, if I just walk down there, it'll just be like smoke and, and magic all around me. But you do, you walk down there, and then you look behind you and the white's back there, and you never actually get there. And then by the time you get to work, usually that mist has disappeared. And that's the idea. That's the concept. This temporary thing that you can almost grab, but never actually get there. That's what the writer's talking about. Life is like that. Always striving, never actually getting there. And in a way, this isn't a strange work. You might have heard similar sentiments in other writings before, but back in the day of the teacher, there was a work known as, in Babylon anyway, known as the Dialogue of Pessimism. The Dialogue of Pessimism. Basically, you've got a noble, and he's talking to his slave about what he should do next. And where they end up is here. What then is good? What can we do, he's asking. The only thing that's good is to have my neck broken and yours too, and be thrown into the river. That is good. And he says to his slave, we'll start with you. And the slave says back, yep, okay, but let me tell you, I don't think you'll last 3 weeks without me. And so he goes on. Or maybe you're more familiar with Shakespeare. In Macbeth, he says, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets upon his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think Shakespeare was going through his emo stage. But maybe a bit more recently, if you know the movie, the dread pirate Roberts says to
Reason.
Buttercup, grumpy old man, life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something. Yeah. Again and again, we get the sense, don't we, that, yeah, life, if you look at it long and hard enough, is a bit futile. And this is what the teacher wants us to grapple with. But he's not a nihilist. He's not a nihilist. He's got a particular context in mind. In fact, he artificially, in a sense, restricts his thinking to a phrase that you might have picked up a couple of times there. A phrase that he uses a time and again, under the sun. Everything is futile under the sun. Sentence 3 says, what does a person gain from all the efforts they labour at under the sun? And you see it there again in sentence 9 and 13 and 14. And then again throughout the book as you read through it. And in a sense, it's a false distinction that the teacher's introducing. He's saying that if you think of the world from the sun down, if you exclude the heavens, and in a sense exclude the God who sits in the heavens, then life looks like this, and goes on to explain and describe it. So he has this certain lens that he's forcing us to view the world through. It's a secular lens. And his main point is that this secular vision of the world is a dark and morose one. And that's why I think this book is so relevant today. Because we live in a world that thinks in terms of only the world under the sun. In the latest census in Australia, the number of people who no longer practice a religion has now eclipsed the number of Catholics who say that they're Catholic in Australia. And while 50.4%, if you like the statistics, then there you go, 50.4% of Australians claim that they are Christian, only 8% of people in Australia go along to church regularly. And why is that important? Well, as a country, we think that we're religious. We think that we kind of include the above the in the heavens part, but actually our practices suggest that we live almost entirely with this under-the-sun view of the world, this secular vision of our lives. We may not be philosophical atheists, but we are practicing atheists. is the point. We tend to live as if God has no part in our lives. And so Ecclesiastes is our book. It's the book talking to our secular age. And as you read through, it's a little bit dark and a little bit depressing. The end point is the secular world is futile. It's without meaning. It's without a sense of purpose. However, there is a way out. There is hope. You're not just going to be sitting through 4 weeks of everything is futile, because that would really get us down. There is hope, and we'll get there. But it may not be the hope that you would expect. Well, let's dive on in. Let's have a look at those verses. And start there in sentence 3. What does a man gain for all his efforts? He labours under the sun. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and panting rushes over and returns to the place where it originally rose from. Gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning, turning goes the wind, and the wind returns in its cycles. All the streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. The streams are flowing to the place, and they flow there again. All things are wearisome. And you just get the sense of those cycles in nature. It just, every day, the sun gets up, and it goes over, and it sets, and it goes back again. The sea is never full of rivers just flowing into it.
It's the circle of life.
It is the circle of life, and it is wearisome.
When you've got to work in it.
The eye is not satisfied by seeing, or the ear with filled with hearing. We're never satisfied. What has been is what will be, and what has been done will be done again. There is no new thing under the sun. Can anyone say, look, there's something new? No. It's already existed in the ages before. You've probably seen that when someone puts up a post on Facebook and they say, look at this, it's new, this is really exciting. And someone says, no, so-and-so said that years ago. It's old, it's boring. There is no memory of those who have come before, and those who will come after, there will be no memory of them either. It's just tiring. On and on and on is the sense of it. As you look at the world around us, it just grinds you down with the just monotony of it all. And it doesn't matter what you do. If you try to attempt something new, someone will just point and say, no, that's been done before. And who's ever been in a meeting and someone says, hey, let's try this, and then someone says, we tried that before. It doesn't work. It just grinds you down, doesn't it? And in the end, we're all forgotten. Despite all our energy, the memory of us fades all too quickly. I was waiting in a bus station in Sydney once, and this monument was behind me. And it had been there, you know, for years, and I'd never really seen it. And then I turned and I looked at it one day, and there was an interesting inscription on there. It was a monument to the 501 members of the Grand United Order of Oddfellows who died in World War I. Never heard of Oddfellows before. Didn't even know there was a Grand United Order, let alone an order. But there they were. They had died. And underneath was, their name liveth forevermore. And it's a wonderful, ornate monument to a bunch of brave men who I have the foggiest idea who they are. I don't know if there's anyone living who still knows their names. Their names live evermore? Well, only as a number. Even grand heroes are forgotten. You see, you get into this stuff, it becomes depressing, doesn't it? And the teacher isn't even done with that. He keeps going. He gets to wisdom, and you think for a guy whose whole business is about being wise and wisdom, he'd have something positive to say, but no, just more futility. He says, I apply my mind to seek and explore through wisdom all that was done under the heavens. God has given people this miserable task to keep them occupied. I've seen all things that were done under the sun and found everything to be futile. A pursuit of the wind. What is crooked cannot be straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I've amassed wisdom far beyond all those who are over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has thoroughly grasped wisdom and knowledge. I apply my mind to know wisdom and knowledge, matters and folly. I learned that you're expecting something. Come on, give me some hope. This too is a pursuit of the wind. For with much wisdom is much sorrow. Knowledge increases, grief increases. He's saying, I've done all the PhDs. I've done the master's certificates. And it's nothing. It leads to misery. He's even had a go at folly and madness. He's sort of thrown his lot into wisdom and into just doing stupid stuff. And it's all just a chasing of the wind. It's futile. It kind of echoes with the whole idea that ignorance is bliss. You know, no one ever wants to know how the sausage is made. Wisdom only drives you to contemplate that actually at the end of the day, death makes all things futile under the sun. And as you read through Ecclesiastes, which I really hope that you do, you just get this overriding sense that again and again, everything we try is made futile by the fact that we all die. You want to try wisdom? It's futile. Spoiler alert, pleasure? Same thing, futile. Love, you want to try love? Futile. It's a huge waste of time if death is the end. If our fate is just to pass from this world, having kicked the dust around for a few years and to pass from memory, then it is all futile. But we can get the sense of what he's trying to help us understand, can't we? Now, your convinced atheist, not your practicing atheist, your convinced atheist actually understands this. There's a guy, his name is Alon Shahar, and he's the author of The Young Atheist Handbook. And he has said this: yes, of course I know that life is ultimately without meaning or purpose. But the trick is not to wake up every morning and feel that way. Cognitive dissonance? Embrace it. Create a sense of meaning and purpose by doing something useful with your life. And if you're really stuck, eat rice and dal. Physically filling yourself with food you love really does fill the emptiness that you may feel inside. That almost makes me feel more depressed than anything that the teacher's written. Rice and dal, wow. But do you get there? Cognitive dissonance. In other words, just lie to yourself. Try and create some sense of meaning and maybe you'll get there. But it doesn't sit comfortably, does it? Meaningless in life violates our soul. We reject it. But remember, most of us aren't convinced atheists. Most of us are merely practicing atheists. We still live in hope that there is some sort of sense of meaning, and the teacher does give us hope. But we need to skip to the end. You know, that you need to violate that kind of, oh no, you can't read the end until you've got the way through. No, we're going to skip to the end. And we're going to get the conclusions because they make sense of the whole thing. The teacher says, when all has been heard, the conclusion of the matter is this. Fear God and keep his commandments, because this is for all humanity. For God will bring every act of judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. There is an answer. There is an answer to our futile life, and it is dealing with God. And there's three things he says here that we need to come to terms with about God. God has spoken, God is judge, and God wants us to rightly relate to him. So God has spoken in his laws. He has revealed the way he has made the world and how he wants us to live in that world. And that God has spoken means that he wants us to live in some sense in a relationship with him. And the right way to relate to the God who has made all things and will judge all things is this word fear, which you could say is reverence, or but the one who's made all things and is going to judge it, there is a rightness to respecting who that is. But God is also judge, and that is a bit of a hard word to swallow in our day and age. It's a harsh word, it's a bit of a judgy word. But actually, there is a concept here that's echoed in the works of Immanuel Kant. What he says, just to sum it up for you, is that the concept of morality and justice, if it's going to mean anything, can't be frustrated by death. If death ends all things, then justice and morality is meaningless. You see, if the rich man who behaves terribly and the poor man who behaves honourably both have the same end, then justice, morality, doesn't mean a dime. Justice only makes sense if there is justice after death, if there is life following death. Justice only makes sense if all hidden things are exposed, like the teacher says. There is only meaning if we have to do with eternal, sorry, there is only meaning if the things that we do have eternal implications. So life under the sun only has meaning if we notice that God has broken into our world. Life only has meaning if you deal with that God.